Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. So this is a talk about OSNs and the modeling of OSNs. My background is in complex networks. As we've known for the last decade or so, there's been an enormous amount of work mining and modeling the structure of these things. So they range from things like the web graph, which is one of the early ones studied, to now OSNs and protein-protein interaction networks in the cell and many others. Of course, OSNs is our focus for today, and these have become extremely popular. So what I'm particularly interested in is looking at just the graph structure, just the friendship link structure of these networks, and looking at the properties that people have found and trying to develop rigorous mathematical models for them. So some properties that we've seen for OSNs, which have actually been shown to hold in many other networks, include things like power law, degree distributions. Okay, so these are prevalent almost everywhere. The small world property, which was mentioned a few times this morning. So small world, of course, just means that you have low distances measured by either diameter or average distance, and you have high clustering coefficient. You also see inside of OSNs a strong community structure, and I'll get back to that a little bit later. But there's some other things that you see in OSNs which you don't necessarily see in, say, such as the network such as the web graph. Kleinberg and Feloutsis and Leskovic looked at this densification power law, where the average degree is increasing over time. So the networks are getting more and more dense. Furthermore, you have this phenomenon of shrinking distances, which Kumar et al. Found in a study looking at Yahoo 360, that over time, the diameter tends to actually go down. So why are we interested in modeling complex networks in the first place? Well, we're curious animals. We want to understand the generative mechanisms underlying these networks and how they grow over time. One other reason is because we want to use the models as a kind of predictive tool. So we can take a snapshot of what's happening now and have a good model. It can tell us what sort of trends we can see in the future. Of course, from my point of view, I'm a mathematician. I'm interested in the mathematical challenges that arise in modeling these networks. Many new and interesting mathematical insights come out of looking at OSNs and complex networks that you wouldn't ordinarily think of in your ivory tower of pure mathematics. Of course, also, I think probably the most important reason, one way of looking at modeling is it's just fitting data. So you have these toy models and you're fitting data, but what I hope to convince you by the end of the talk is that models can actually give you some insight into the hidden reality of the networks. And I'll talk about this idea of dimension of an OSN. We'll get to that a little bit later. Okay, so there are many models out there. Too many, really, to describe, of course, ranging from preferential attachment onwards. So what models are good? What models are a good fit for OSNs? In fact, there are very few models which have been proposed for online social networks. Not completely surprising, the field is relatively new, but there are also some challenges specific in OSNs that you don't see elsewhere, like I mentioned with densification and other things. So the goal, what I am trying to do, is trying to find a good, rigorous mathematical model which simulates most of the properties of online social networks, and also it should evolve in a kind of natural way. Now what that means is fairly subjective, but we want something which is natural. And this is a quote, a famous quote by the statistician Bach, something to keep in mind. Anytime you're talking about a model, all models are wrong, but some are better than others. So the goal is take models, improve on them. You'll never have a perfect model, but hopefully you'll be able to explain at least some of the things that you're looking at using the models. Okay, so the first model I want to talk about has to do with transitivity, which is a well-known property studied by social scientists. So it's a simple idea that's actually been mentioned today of, you know, friends of your friends are more likely friends. For example, Queen Rania on Twitter follows Krishan Amanpour from CNN, who follows Ashton Kutcher, and you're more likely to see that Queen Rania follows Ashton Kutcher, which in fact you do. And this is a very sort of core concept in looking at triples inside of OSNs. So that was the idea that we had to put forward a very simple model with a long-winded title, Iterated Local Transitivity, or ILT. This is with some students and some postdocs. So this key idea of transitivity is what guided us. Friends of friends are more likely friends. So we tried to make a very, very simple model, in fact, deterministic model, which would take this to the extreme. So you start with graph network of order n, anything you like. For example, it could be a small clique or cycle. And then you do this kind of cloning thing, where you take your graph at time t, gt, and for each of the nodes x, you're going to introduce a new node, call it x prime, which is joined to x, but x prime is also joined to all of the neighbors of x. Okay, so someone's coming into this OSN, gets a friendship invitation, and it doesn't usually happen, but say over time, the friend, x prime, is going to link to all of the friends of the person who invited them. So this is clearly not realistic, but we wanted to take a look at this as sort of a case study, see what happens, this very simple graph process. What kind of graphs do you get emergent out of this very, very simple cloning or duplication process? So here's an example. So there's the C4 that we start with for a cycle at time 0, and this is the graph that you get at time 1. The highlighted red subgraph is just your C4, just to illustrate there. That's time 1, time 2, so the graph is doubling, right? It went from 8 to 16 nodes. Time 3, 4, and 5. What you see, clearly from the picture, but you can make rigorous, is that it's densifying. In fact, the number of edges coming in is growing faster than the number of nodes. So you get a densification power law. The exponent for your power law is log 3 over log 2. And furthermore, if you start with specific graphs at time 0, say like a large cycle, you're going to find that distances actually decrease over time. So it simulates that property as well. Furthermore, people have looked at a spectral point of view, looking at the adjacency matrix, the normalized Laplacian matrix for these things. And what they found is that the community structure, in some sense, is reflected by bad spectral expansion, large gaps between the eigenvalues, the first and second eigenvalue. And this is work reported by a physicist, Estrada, in 2006. So it has all these good things. Of course, no model is perfect, right? And when we plotted the degree distribution and we did some analysis, we realized quickly we don't have power law graphs. Right? Don't have power law graphs. This is starting with K3 after 11 time step, you get sort of this binomial type distribution. Right? So it's not perfect, but again, it was sort of a model to illustrate what happens with a simple assumption, what can you get? Okay, so to try and rectify that, we started thinking about geometry. Now, apart from geography, which we're going to hear in our next talk, geometry may not initially occur to you as a natural idea to model social networks. But you can think of a kind of social space where people have users. Users have attributes. And these attributes are coordinates in a vector. And the closer you are, the closer your attributes are. So the attributes could be anything. They could be sex, age, political interests, whatever, religion. And so the idea is to take your OSN and embed it in a, for now, Euclidean space. Could be 2, 3, or higher dimensions and see what you get. And then you have a method of link formation and so on. Okay, so if you do that, then one obvious thing occurs to you. You have a kind of notion of dimension. So what is a dimension of an OSN? Very roughly, the way we capture that is it's the minimum number of attributes that you need to classify users. If you knew this set of attributes, you can either pinpoint a specific user or a small group of users. It's like the game of 20 questions, right? You have some topic in your head, and people are allowed that you don't tell people. And people are allowed to ask you questions, up to 20 questions, and they have to determine what you want. So we're interested in figuring out a good formula for the dimension of an OSN, which is credible, which is based on the model, and also hopefully eventually based on what we see in the real world. So that's one of the guiding questions here. Okay, so in terms of geometry and graphs, work has been done. So-called random geometric graphs are out there. They come up in looking at ad hoc networks, wireless networks. So you have points placed randomly in space there. Okay, so it could be in the plane. So you just put them uniformly at random in a unit cube, say, or unit square. And every node has a sphere of influence, like a little coin around it, which is constant radius, as you see illustrated in this picture here. And if the nodes are close, if their spheres touch, then you put an edge. So the randomness comes from the placement of the nodes, and you get these graphs. For example, this is what you get if you simulate this with 5,000 nodes on a unit square. So there's some structure in there, but it's fairly uniform. And it diverges from the traditional Erdős-Rényi type random graph in many ways, but it still really is not a good model for what we're looking for. So we thought of this spatially preferred attachment model a couple years ago, which took a sort of variant of this, where basically the spheres of influence we allow to change in their area, in their radius. So the volume of the sphere of influence now is going to be proportional to your degree. So the larger the degree, the larger these spheres of influence are. Okay? So you could have, say, something put on a circle or sphere, and you have these little spheres of influence, but they're all of variable size. Now, over time, you're adding in new nodes, and the sphere of influence shrinks because your space is growing. And what you find, asymptotically almost surely, i.e. with probability tending to 1, as the number of nodes goes to infinity, you get power law graphs. Okay, because essentially people with large spheres of influence attract more new nodes. It's intuitive and you can prove it rigorously. There's also another model out there for complex networks, maybe you've heard of or not, called protean graphs. Introduced originally by some physicists, the usual way, and then some mathematicians started studying it also. Tomasz Wujczak, famous random graph theorist, and Pavel Perlot, and then also Janson Perlot. So a very simple idea, you have a parameter alpha in 0, 1, and every node is ranked 1 through n by some ranking function. Okay, so there's a rank, your popularity. If you're ranked number 1, you're the most popular. If you're ranked n, you're the least. So at every time step now, you add in a new node, but you also kill off an existing node. Okay, so it's a dynamical type system, but you can show it's ergodic. You get a stationary distribution. And now, the link probability for a new node, the probability that a new node links to an existing node of a given rank r is r to the negative alpha. Right? This is a negative exponent. The lower your rank, i.e. the more popular you are, the higher your link probability. So people who are ranked higher attract more new links. It's kind of preferential attachment idea. And you get power laws and everything else. In fact, you can use almost any, not any kind of ranking scheme you like, but many ranking schemes lead to power laws. So things like random initial ranking. Just everyone just randomly gets a rank. Or you could rank people by degree, so rich get richer. Or you could rank people by age, so older get richer. Some things work, some things don't, but at least these three do. So our idea is to take the geometric random graph model and take the protean model and sort of put it together to give a new model, this time specifically geared towards OSNs. Okay, so again, nodes live in Euclidean space, but we're going to put them in an m-dimensional hypercube. It's a bit of a game. You can take any compact set which has a given measure 1, say. And now, again, the volume of the sphere of influence are all variable, okay, so they're all changing. But the volume changes as a function of rank. The higher your rank, i.e. the lower the rank, closer to 1, the bigger your sphere of influence is going to be. Simple enough idea. So this is called geometric protean, which is the model I'm presenting today. Short form GOP. This is with Jeanette Jensen and Pavel Perlot. Okay, there are two parameters, alpha and beta. Don't worry too much about them. They have to just be inside of 0, 1 and sum up to something less than 1. There's also a parameter which is the dimension of the network. And there are similar things to what happens in protean graphs. Okay, so everybody gets a rank, 1 through n. You live inside of a hypercube. We're going to use this random initial ranking. It made our life easier. You can use other ranking systems, but it's more complicated to analyze. Now, at every time step, someone's born, someone dies. And, of course, you update the ranking. Now, every node has a sphere of influence with this radius, r to the negative alpha and the negative beta. Basically, this beta is a kind of densification parameter, which is going to control how dense the graph is. And you want negative exponents. You want these to shrink over time, but shrink at variable rates. Now, if you have your new node, v, and it falls into a sphere of influence of u, then you just attach it to u. Okay, that's the model. Now, notice it uses both geometry and ranking. And the number of nodes is static, which I think is, you know, actually a realistic assumption. There's an upward limit of how many people are going to join an OSN, the number of people in the world, even if we ignore multiple accounts or not. Top-ranked nodes have the biggest spheres of influence. Okay, so here's a simulation we got on the unit square now for 5,000 nodes. So you see, very different than what I had in the previous model, right? These very high-degree nodes, almost like these little communities, is very lumpy looking. I could put them side by side. This is just random geometric versus GOP. I mean, seeing is believing. They really are different looking networks. You can even see the emergence of these cuts, these sparse cuts, signifying the community structure. Well, we can say a lot. In fact, this model does almost everything. It gives you power laws. Okay, so you get a power law degree distribution asymptotically almost surely with exponent 1 plus 1 over alpha. So by choosing alpha, you can get anything between 2 and infinity. The average degree is given by this quantity here. And assuming that your beta is small enough, you can make this a dense graph. So the average degree will grow superlinearly, which has been observed by Kleinberg and others in actual OSNs. The diameter is given by this formula. We just found an upper bound. Now, the main thing to, in looking at this, the main thing to realize, the dimension m is part of the formula for the diameter. That turned out to be critical. Now, if you take the diameter to be a slow-growing function, say logarithmically growing function of the order of the graph, what you're actually going to get is constant diameter. And this log n for the dimension, that turns out, we think, to be the right estimate of what the dimension is. I'll get to that in just a little bit. Okay, so we can prove all these things rigorously. The good thing is that the number of nodes doesn't change over time, so you can use classical tools like Chernoff bounds and so on to get this, as opposed to having pulled all kind of things out of your sleeve like generalized martingales, so it's a little bit easier to analyze that way. Just some more details, if you're interested. With regards to degree distribution, we have a range. It's typical where we have a concentration for a power law. So this is a cumulative degree distribution, nodes of degree at least k. So it's k to negative 1 over alpha. You add 1 for the actual degree distribution. And the range between little m and big M, your degrees have to be bigger than this. It's a bit of a game. You want your degrees to be bigger than the minimum degree, at least a lot larger than the minimum degree, for things to be concentrated. And also similarly on the upper side. So for capital M, you choose this. And if you're much beyond that, you can't guarantee concentration. Which is typical, you see power law in the middle. Same old, same old. For the density, just a moment's consideration, the way the model is defined. I to the negative alpha, n to the negative beta is exactly the probability that a new node links to an existing one of rank I. So using that, you can just sum up all the probabilities here to get the average, the expected number of edges that you add every time step. And approximating by an integral, you get 1 over 1 minus alpha, n to the 1 minus alpha minus beta. Now, what's important about this? If you look at beta, you see it controls density. For example, if beta is less than 1 minus alpha, here you're getting a positive exponent, so you're going to have this superlinear growth for the density, right, which is what you expect. Okay, also the diameter, let me give you, I don't know if we've seen any proof so far in this conference. Maybe I'm going to be the first. It's a real bare sketch of a proof of how the diameter works. So basically, you have this notion of an eminent node, which is old. Okay, at least n over 2 nodes are younger. Older nodes typically are richer in these models. And it's highly ranked. The ranking is higher than some given R, which you're going to figure out later. So you have your hypercube. Just imagine it's a unit square for a minute. You're going to break it up into smaller unit squares. And you want to find these eminent nodes inside the smaller squares. So you partition the hypercube into these sub-hypercubes. And now you choose the size of the hypercubes in R in such a way that the following can happen, and we can prove you can do this. AS, each hypercube is going to contain at least log squared n many eminent nodes, just enough for things to work. And the sphere of influence of any given subcube has to cover all of the sub-hypercube it's in, but all of its neighboring hypercubes has to have a good long reach. Then you call that the backbone. And the backbone is really what gives you the upper bound estimate on the diameter now. So basically then you show, you can prove that any node is distance 2 from a backbone node. And this is basically the very high-level sketch of how the proof works. Okay, another thing that I mentioned earlier are spectral properties. So there's this notion of spectral gap, the distance between the first and second eigenvalue. And it's one way of measuring expansion in a graph. For example, if you look at classical random graphs, this tends to 0 as n gets large. But in our graph, in fact, or GOP graphs, the spectral gap is close to 1. So it tells you that the networks are kind of clumpy, right? They're clumpy. And this is, again, work by this physicist who posited this way of measuring community structure, this idea of bad expansion that you'd expect in social networks there to be more intra versus inter-community links. And bad expansion is significant, or signifies that, supposedly. So our model has that. Now, I mentioned this idea of dimension. Now, if you took, say, the order of the network n, the power law exponent b, and average degree d and diameter d, if you look at the formulas that I gave, I mean, ignoring the constants, the big O, little o notation for a second, you can actually go back and solve for what the dimension is, and you get a formula. So the dimension m of your OSN is the logarithm of the order divided by some stuff. Now, in some sense, all this is a bit of a game. It's really hinting at that the dimension should be log n. Okay, so this minimum number of attributes you need to classify users, we think, based on what the model's telling us, should be logarithm of the number of nodes. It remains to be proven, and maybe it's up to you guys to do that, but so it's a kind of reverse engineering approach, and this is what we really like about modeling. We're not just trying to fit data. The idea is you take these four network parameters, which you can find in the literature, Mislev et al., a lot of other people have done studies with lots of information about power law exponents and average degree and all this. You can take all that and just chug it into your formula, and you get a notion of dimension. And the thesis here, where our research really wants to do, is just take the graph structure, just the friendship links, and try and infer as much as you can about the social space. So can you recover the geometry of the social space just from the graph structure? That's the big open question. And we think this idea of dimension is maybe one first step in that direction. So we looked at the literature, at some OSNs, reported things like the power law exponent and other things, the average degree, and we calculated the dimension. For example, YouTube 6, Twitter 4, and so on. Taking the average of all these, you get about 6, so it's sort of this maybe catchy phrase, the 6 dimensions of separation for OSNs. I don't know if it's true or not, but possibly. Okay, so what's left to do? Well, you know, we'd like to actually try and fit the model to data and try and determine if this log n estimate of the dimension is really accurate. Also, I mean, once you have, you know, the network and you have a graph data, I mean, you want to compare and compare it versus other models. There aren't really many good ways to compare models. There's a little bit of work done in the PPI literature on this, comparing models using graph similarity. The problem is, of course, graph isomorphism is too complex. What do you mean by two graphs being similar? Okay, they have the same degree distribution. Well, Willinger has told us that's not enough. Certainly it's not enough. So there are many other ways you can, many other measures you can use to determine if graphs are similar, and it might be interesting to do that in terms of OSNs. Also, may lead to something with community detection. So first, you may want to map everything in space. If you have a nice dimensional space where you fit your data, you know this dimension is 6, you put it in a 6-dimensional space, can it tell you where the communities are? Also, just sort of a little more flighty, now that you have a rigorous graph model which fits all the parameters, it might be interesting to take a look at some epidemiological models like CIS or SIR, and that could be a model for the spread of gossip or influence in a social network. I mean, these are traditionally used to spread, you know, looking at viruses and things and epidemics, but what about using them to model how gossips go along or information or news is spread on Twitter? Also, I mean, my realm in graph theory, there are all kinds of models out there. People are studying like firefighting, like setting fires to graphs and looking how they spread, and cops and robbers, which all might be interesting paradigms to see how information spreads on the network. Okay, so to get the paper, of course, on the Wozen website, but you can also go to my website. These are my sponsors. And just a shameless plug at the end, I'm now co-editor-in-chief of Internet Math, and we're looking for submissions. We're going to have a journal relaunch very soon. The journal has been edited for many years by Fanchun Graham, and she's still co-editing. We'd like to put an emphasis also not just on the theoretical stuff, but also on the empirical papers. So if you have something with some good statistical data, a nice high-quality paper you want to submit, by all means. Thanks.
So I have a question. Now that you have dimensions in social networks, does it mean that you also have coordinates? And does it mean that you can build a metric space out of it with distances, which would somehow resemble the social distances in the graph?
Sure. It's a very good question. We take it to be Euclidean space, probably highly non-Euclidean. We use actually the torus metric to get rid of boundary effects, right? But the question really is, what is the space? What is the geometry? And that is a really good question. We don't really know. We took it as Euclidean, but I don't think it is.
Would the number of hops in a network be any hint as to the number of dimensions? Because when we make a hop for in the famous Milgram experiment, when I forward this mail to someone because I've been to school with him, right, and et cetera.
Yeah, I think there probably is a correlation, like I threw up sort of tongue-in-cheek a little bit, six dimensions of separation. I mean, we don't know what the attributes are. So supposedly, you know, if it takes, say, six attributes to tell someone, to specify a person on an OSN or a small group of people, what are those attributes? We don't really know what they are. It remains to be proven if it is six, but I mean, even if it is, what are they?
This reminds me a bit of a paper some years ago about Duncan Watts, which was trying to say that when we search for other person in a social network, we actually search along different dimensions, like working at the same place, being in the same city, being at the same school, and so on. Probably, do you think there is any way to actually map these final dimensions to some dimensions that we are now seeing in these social networks, which present different layers of information?
I believe the answer is yes. I don't know how. I think it's up to the empiricists here to maybe answer that and see how you would map.
Hi, I'm Alessandra from UCSB. My first question is, did you compare with forest fire the model from Jur, Losef, and others? Because it seems that your goal are exactly the same. So the power law, all the goal that you achieve with your model are the same. So I would like to see what kind of comparison in the result you have.
Yeah, I did look at forest fire in the Kronecker product graph and
exactly,
others. Yeah,
I mean,
we
exactly.
get densification. They didn't look at the spectral properties so much. Again, someone's going to correct me, but you know, and I don't think their goal was looking at social networks, right? So, but that's a very interesting model, and again, it would be interesting to compare. One of the challenges in modeling is you have various models. How do they compare?
Okay, we have a paper at DubDubDub this year where Jur also had some other paper to compare those models under different metrics.
I'd be interested
in
reading
that. And we proposed to use DK2 series to compare different model. I think it's very interesting to see what kind of the result and how we can understand better this network.
It Absolutely. Right, I'd be interested in reading
Thank
that.
You.
Yeah, thanks.
We can speak later offline.
Any other questions? I had a question. You hinted at this with the non-Euclidean distance and so on, but I'm just wondering to what extent the dimensions are additive. So is it sufficient for me to be connected to anyone here just because we're interested in online social networks? Or am I going to prefer the other Croatian in the room and, you know, someone who's similar in age? How do the dimensions add in a way?
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question, but I've never thought of that.
Okay. Well, let's thank the speaker again.